I was going into the Winter Garden in New York in the passing show in 1917. Mm-hmm. Now, this was in February. And I meet Roscoe Arbuckle, Fatty Arbuckle at that time. He had just left Senate and signed with Joe Skank. Joe Skank producing independent pictures. He was only producing at that time one company, and that was the Norma Talmadge Company. Mm-hmm. Then he signed Arbuckle from Senate. And before he made his first picture, Arbuckle met me on Broadway. Mm-hmm. And says, "Have you ever been in a motion picture?" And I says, "I've never even been in a studio." He says, "Well, come on down and play a bit with me. I'm starting tomorrow. And see how you like it." So I went down there and did a bit in a picture with him. I went back and asked the Schuberts to let me out of my contract at the Winter Garden, and I stayed in pictures. Mm-hmm. Then I went into the Army. I was with the 40th Division in France for 7 months in France. I was a doughboy.
Oh, yeah.
A 40-and-8er I was. Then I came back. Then Joe Skank started me with the same company, only making my own pictures. The Navigator was my biggest grossing picture, The Navigator.
You remember Steamboat Bill Jr.?
Yes.
Yeah. And there was a short in which you
played... Comedy Was King, they called the thing. They got a picture of mine in it called Cops.
Yeah.
Were a lot of policemen chasing me.
Oh, and you did a sketch where you're on a ladder.
That's
over
funny.
A
I
fence.
Came up here to Frisco and shot a lot of scenes here with those police.
Did you?
Yeah.
There was a scene in a movie that I remember I used to see at the Nelson Theater in Fairmont, West Virginia, in which you stuck your head in a cannon. You remember? Was that in the General?
That's the General.
That's the General, yeah. I have had a chance to read about some of the great comedians. For instance, there was a John Bunny.
John Bunny. Well, he's your first motion picture fat man comic, you know. But exactly. When they got rolling and you started to get Chaplins and Arbuckles and Harold Lloyds and things like that, then it changed.
I wonder if when you were in vaudeville with your family as part of the Three Keatons, you ever saw an act called McIntyre and Heath?
Yes, very often.
Yeah. How about were Harrigan and Hart still they preceded?
They were. But McIntyre and Heath was blackface.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And two very funny men.
Yeah, and of course, Eddie Foy, I guess, was very big at the time that you were in your youth. George M. Cohan, huh?
That's right. Mm-hmm. Raymond Hitchcock. You know who I consider that one of the greatest performers of all time? All-around comedian and showman.
Who's that?
In other words, these combination song and dance man. The greatest all-around performer that I ever remember is Fred Stone.
Fred Stone,
Yes, the original of...
The
Wizard of Oz.
Yes, he played with...
And the Red Mill.
Yeah.
And the Lady of the Slipper.
All
Stepping for... Stones. Oh, and Chin Chin. For a great many years, George M. Cohan and Fred Stone owned Broadway.
I have seen you take pratfalls.
I was raised doing those things, so I was a pro at an awful early age doing roughhouse work. In fact, when I first come into pictures, I scared most of the Keystoners to death.
There was a sketch that you did where you're standing by a bar... And there was no rail, so you put one foot on the bar.
And then put the other one up. Ray's doing roughhouse work and falls, and then, I just had to learn to do them. It was the only way I could get out of it.
Is there anybody today that you feel can do that, can do a great sight
gag? No, because there's no school for that.
I guess that's right. There's no more burlesque in the old
fashion. You see what's happened to you. That's your biggest school today are nightclubs.
Mm-hmm.
And summer stock theaters or something like that. So most of your young comics are just stand-up talking comedians. Red Skelton is one of my pet comics as far as that goes. Well, Red could have been with us in the silent days.
And you've lost all your character comedians.
Slim Somerville.
Well, no, a character comedian like Weber and Fields with German.
Yeah.
George Friedman, Italian.
Yeah.
All your blackface comedians.
Mm-hmm.
We're losing them all. Jewish comedians.
Yes.
We used to have Ben Welch, or Joe Welch, his name was the greatest I ever saw. But they're out and out characters.
Mm-hmm.
They're not grotesque. See, the Marx Brothers, for instance. That's a grotesque. That comes under the heading of burlesque or...
Buffoonery?
Or clowns or something like that. It's not. He's not a character comedian. But these old-timers, we had some great Irish comedians. I'll show you how far back that goes. When I was very young, I mean, when I say I was around 5 or 6 years old, a show by the name of McFadden's Flats, playing at a theater in Rochester, New York, and it must have been the home of one of the Hibernian mother lodges or something.
Yeah.
But they came to that show one night and completely wrecked the theater, the scenery, the actors, and everything else with the eggs, tomatoes, and everything that the audience could carry in to throw at them because of the grotesque characters on the stage.
When you hear people praise comedians of today, fellows like Mortsall, imagine that you must hark back in your recollection of the days of Will Rogers, who was a great commentator in our times.
Yeah.
And I understand that Harrigan of Harrigan and Hart used to be very, very blunt in his conversation about politics. And
oh, well, sure. And a Dutch comedian by the name of Cliff Gordon.
Yeah.
Senator George Murphy was one.
Yeah.
He called himself Senator.
Uh-huh.
With a Dutch accent, German accent.
Mm-hmm.
Start right off, said, the trouble with the country today is it's being pushed.
Well, there was a movie character by the name of Ned Sparks.
Oh, Ned Sparks, the reason he didn't smile or laugh was because he always played an old grouch. He was just a grouch. I just simply worked with him,
and
a frozen face. I worked on the stage that way before I ever saw a studio.
Did you know Fred Allen?
Yes.
I got the feeling that Fred Allen was influenced by you quite a bit.
Well, I don't think so. I think it's just his delivery. It was his way of working.
Mm-hmm. What do you figure that has been the golden period of American comedy?
Well, I'd have to go back about 35 years, I think. I had the biggest batch. By about that time, your picture comedians were well established. Your Broadway musical shows had some greats.
Mm-hmm.
Your W.C. Fields, your Eddie Cantors, your Frank Kenny, what's his name with the breakaway legs? Leon Earle, Joe Cook. Of course, Ed Wynn's always been one of my pets, too.
Oh, yeah. How about Bobby Clark?
Oh, Bobby Clark.
Yeah. Harry Langdon.
Harry Langdon.
Laurel and Hardy.
Laurel and Hardy.
I want to ask you what you think about comedians and public personalities in politics.
Well, I can answer that last one as something that my old man drummed into me when I was very young. He says, an actor must stay out of politics and religion. In other words, he meant you never argue religion.
Mm-hmm.
If there's an argument starts, you ease out of it the best way you can. You were born a Protestant, and as far as you know, that's all there is to it.
Is that what he
But you don't argue the point. And politics you stay clear of.
What do you think about your role in the Once Upon a Mattress?
This is a good show, and it's fun to do. That's the best part of it, see. In other words, I've reached that stage. If it's work for me, I don't want to do it.
Uh-huh.
But you give me a show that's fun to do, that's different, then I'll do it.
I wonder if you have any plans at all to return to television for any spectaculars in which...
Well, I don't mind the spectaculars. I do a couple of those every year.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't do a weekly show.
Mm-hmm.
For a comedian like myself to do a weekly show is the fastest way into Forest Lawn that I know.
So none of that, huh?
No, sir. It puts your drive you either nuts or puts you in your grave, because that trying to dig up material for that weekly show, if you don't give a darn, like Milton Berle didn't care how many times he repeated something or whose material he used. Mm-hmm. He didn't care. He broadcast that. So he didn't care.
Mm-hmm.
That's a different proposition, but I just couldn't work that way. And you cannot dig up that material every week.
In this world of 1960, who makes you laugh today?
Skelton's my pet.
Oh, yeah.
I like Skelton. I used to like Lucas Costello, too, very much.
Mm-hmm.
Hated to lose him.
Mm. I've heard that Abbott
is going back. I get laughs out of Jerry Lewis.
Yeah.
I love what's his name in his airplane ride, too.
His airplane ride?
Yeah.
Oh, Shelley Berman. People say that comedy has changed through years. I don't think it really has. I think people still laugh at
no.
much of
the well, I'll show you two incidents why. You go back, say, 40 years, and the world market of American pictures, the comedians, Chaplin, Lloyd, and myself, were the three top grossing stars mm-hmm. throughout the rest of the world. Here in the United States, maybe a Valentino came along and outgrosses here and a Gloria Swanson for a couple of years or something like that, but back we'd come again. Mm-hmm. But they never passed us in any European. The same things that the American audience laughed at here, they laughed at in China, India, Russia, South Africa, South America, every corner of the globe. And I could go any place in Europe today and do a routine and get the same laughs that I got before, the same ones that I'd get here. So there is no cycle to that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just as that you've lost your school for action type of comedians.
Marcel Marceau,
yeah.
Bip, the pantomimist. It seems like now this...
Well, he tries to combine the old French pantomime
mm-hmm.
with ballet yeah. and from an artistic standpoint.